Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton and our producer, and we are coming up on Tuesday, the midterm elections, and man, oh man, oh man, have we been talking about that for the last 2 years. Well, here we go. It's just about to happen. The president, this weekend, his approval rating at 42, the disapproval rating at 56, according to Rasmussen. So the Democrats have unloaded a new strategy for us here across America. It is to insult the intelligence of every American voter, and for that matter, every American. And, oh, by the way, democracy, the United States democracy, will come to an end Tuesday if Republicans win, as the authoritarian regime will take over and begin to kill our children. No, I didn't make that up. Michael Beschloss, the noted historian, came up with that one this week.
And a historian 50 years from now, if historians are allowed to write in this country, and if there are still free publishing houses and a free press, which I'm not certain of, but if that is true, a historian will say what was at stake tonight and this week was the fact whether we will be a democracy in the future, whether our children will be arrested and conceivably killed. We're on the edge of a brutal authoritarian system, and it could be a week away.
And let's hope they don't legalize whatever he is smoking. President Biden speaking this week. Now, he calls this kind of last-minute primetime speech from Union Station, and he mentions the economy one time, just breezing over the economy to get to the main topic. He doesn't mention anything else that's on voters' minds. I mean, he's got one little mention of the economy and then nothing else. Doesn't touch any of the rest of it. But he goes after democracy, and that threat to democracy that you just heard Michael Beschloss referring. Biden mentions democracy 38 times in his speech at Union Station, and here's just a sample.
You know, American democracy is under attack because the defeated former president of the United States refused to accept the results of the 2020 election. Extreme MAGA Republicans aim to question not only the legitimacy of past elections, but elections being held now and into the future. This year, I hope you'll make the future of our democracy an important part of your decision to vote and how you vote.
We'll spare you the other 34 or 35 mentions. So Lawrence O'Donnell, he's another gem. He's out there, and we got a little clip here that features President Biden, Lawrence O'Donnell, and the former president, Barack Obama.
Our democracy is at risk, that our democracy is under threat. The extreme MAGA element of the Republican Party, which is trying to succeed where they failed in 2020, to suppress the right of voters and subvert the electoral system itself.
Because in next week's election, democracy as we know it may not survive.
Democracy's at stake in this election. Democracy as we know it may not survive. It's not an exaggeration. That is a fact.
No, that's a lie. I don't buy that one, Barack. But desperation kicks in as they have to bring him off the bench. Biden is heading out to a couple of blue states this weekend, but they're sending Barack in to do the heavy lift. Now, not only are they basically lying about that, but they're also lying about President Trump. And here's what Joe Biden had to say about COVID and Trump.
Important to remind ourselves of the detail. The fact of the matter is we're 6.4% unemployment when I came to office. Our country is in a pandemic with no plan to get us out of it.
Yeah, 6.4 unemployment because COVID had shut the country down. And this whole idea that there was no plan, I guess President Biden missed the Operation Warp Speed success. No plan. Another lie from the Democrats. I mean, it's so blatantly obvious and pathetic as to what they are trying to pull over on the American people. Now let's go to Hillary Clinton. Hillary has been out, and if that's not enough to motivate more Republican voters, I don't know what is. listen to some of these gems from Hillary Clinton. Now, you've seen the crime rates rising all over the country. Maybe the murder rates are down in some areas, but robberies are up, burglaries are up, carjackings are up by hundreds of percents in cities around the country. You got people being pushed onto subway tracks, beaten up for no reason, and here's Hillary Clinton on crime.
When they talk about crime, you know, they're just trying to gin up all kinds of fear and anxiety in people. They're not dealing with it. They're not trying to tackle it. And so I view it as an effort to scare voters.
Yep. Let's scare the voters. So Hillary Clinton did a gem when she made the deplorables comment. Remember that one back in 2016? Well, she's kind of up in the ante when she came up with this one.
There's always been a streak of violence, of racism, misogyny, anti-Semitism. It has certainly been thrown into very high relief by the horrific attack on Paul Pelosi. Is not just an aberration where one or two people or a small group engage in that kind of violent rhetoric and urge people to take action against political figures. We're seeing a whole political party.
So the whole political party. So if you're a female Republican voter, you're now a misogynist. I guess this gender neutral stuff's kicking in. So that's just a sample of what's been going on with Hillary Clinton. And we have one more kicker. And here's where she basically says, you know, if you're a voter and a Republican voter, you know, you just don't know what's going on. You're just too dumb to be allowed to go out and vote, basically, is what she's saying here.
I'm not sure they really understand the threats to their way of life. They may think that whoever's chairing a committee is, you know, kind of abstract. But the Republicans in the House and others, like the chair of the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, are on record saying that they are going to put Social Security and Medicare up for a vote.
Let's go to the WMAL Traffic Center. We have Al B.D. there this morning.
In Prince George's County on the BW Parkway southbound, there is a crash. Right lane is blocked after Kenilworth Avenue. On the Beltway, Cabin John, Outer Loop, there is construction. Three right lanes are blocked there between Clara Barton Parkway and the George Washington Parkway. On the Maryland side of the Beltway from Prince George's County to Montgomery County, you're not hitting the brakes on the Inner Loop or on the Outer Loop. And on 270 Montgomery County, lanes are clear between the Beltway and Frederick, northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some morning fog, then partly sunny and unseasonably warm. It's already quite mild for this time of the year. Highs will be in the mid to upper 70s. Mostly cloudy, patchy fog tonight. Lows in the upper 50s to low 60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, unseasonably warm with a few showers. Highs in the low to mid 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Matt Ritter in the First Alert Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital, 618 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and let's take a look at some of the very latest polls. These listed this morning from Real Clear Politics. How close is it? Well, if you look at the Emerson poll in Arizona, it's a dead heat between Blake Masters and Senator Mark Kelly, 48-48. In the gubernatorial race in Arizona, Carrie Lake up by 2 points in the Emerson poll. If we move on to the Georgia Senate race, dead heat, Marist poll this morning, Raphael Warnock, Herschel Walker, each 48-48. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp up over Stacey Abrams this morning, 53-45. Now everybody's watching that race in Pennsylvania. The Senate race, Dr. Oz up by 2 in the Fox 29 poll in Pennsylvania. Now if you look at the Marist poll in Pennsylvania, Fetterman is up over Oz, 51-45. Trafalgar Group has Oz at 48, Fetterman at 46. So a really tight one there. Now, Don Baldock, and we've got a clip we're going to play now from Don Baldock. He's a Republican candidate in New Hampshire. Right now, looking at the polls, and then we'll get to the clip, in New Hampshire. That's one where they basically didn't even think Baldock had a chance. Democrats put money into his primary because they thought he was the easiest guy to beat. Well, the Emerson poll this morning is showing Don Baldock with 46, and Maggie Hassan is just ahead of him at 50. So it's Hassan 50, Baldock 46 this morning, and that's pretty close when you know how these polls can sometimes undersample the Republicans. A lot of talk about the gubernatorial race down in Florida. Well, Ron DeSantis, comfortable lead over Charlie Crist, 54-42, that in the Spectrum News poll. And looking at the Senate race, the Florida State YouGov poll shows Marco Rubio up over Val Demings, 51-44. In Ohio, in the Senate race, a real close one there in some polling, but Emerson now is showing J.D. Vance up over Paul Ryan, 53-44. So that's just a sample of how the polling's going this morning. Now, there's been all this talk of violence and how the, MAGA Republicans are out there and they're all violent extremists. Well, you might know that one of the Republican candidates had a bullet hole in his parents' home's window. They don't think they've traced down who did it, but somebody shot out the window of his parents' house. And as I mentioned, Don Baldock, the Republican Senate candidate in New Hampshire, was headed into a debate with Maggie Hassan, and here's what happened.
And then I guess he just couldn't contain himself, and he charged from his side of the sidewalk on mine. I just turned my side to reduce my profile, he made slight contact with me. I'd call it a graze as a result. But my supporters surrounded me very, very quickly.
So that's the very latest from the campaign trail. Interesting note that NBC had run a story on the Today Show from reporter Miguel Almaguer on the Paul Pelosi attack. NBC pulled the story, said it didn't meet their reporting standards. It did get pulled down, but some people made recordings of it before it did. And we just thought we'd play a little bit of this, and you can hear what NBC took off the air.
NBC News learning new details about the moments police arrived. Sources familiar with what unfolded in the Pelosi residence now revealing when officers responded to the high-priority call, they were seemingly unaware they'd been called to the home of the Speaker of the House. After a knock and announce, the front door was opened by Mr. Pelosi. The 82-year-old did not immediately declare an emergency or try to leave his home, but instead began walking several feet back into the foyer toward the assailant and away from police. It's unclear if the 82-year-old was already injured or what his mental state was, say sources. According to court documents, when the officer asked what was going on, defendant smiled and said everything's good. But instantaneously, a struggle ensued as police clearly saw David DePap strike Paul Pelosi in the head with a hammer.
So NBC removed that piece from their website, and there is a note, quote, "This piece has been removed from publication because it did not meet NBC News reporting standards." It's 6:24. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And, of course, we've got our cast of regulars coming up this morning. Jennifer Harper will join us right after the 6:30 news. And we'll also be talking this morning with Jim Trusty. We'll have the very latest on the Mar-a-Lago investigation from Jim, as well as the conviction of Daryl Banks in the Waukesha Christmas Parade murders. John Gizzi joins us. We'll take a look at the campaign, the final days, also the return of Bibi Netanyahu. He's back in Israel. We'll talk to John about that. Cheryl Atkison will join us this morning, and of course she's the host of Full Measure, and she's got some great stories on the show this weekend. The CDC, a possible overhaul there, some people looking into that at the CDC, and also, she'll take a look at the economy and how it's playing out with the voters around the country. and an interesting shift in residency of Republicans and Democrats. Kind of some neat stuff coming up. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us as we see North Korea has been acting up, firing 3-4 missiles a day this past week. And then KT McFarland will join us, and we will take a look at the mood of the country as the election approaches. That's the Saturday Morning Update. We're at 6:26. In the news at 6:30, North Korea has added to its recent barrage of weapons demonstrations by launching 4 ballistic missiles into the sea, while the U.S. sent 2 supersonic bombers over South Korea, a dueling display of military might. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff says the 4 short-range missiles fired on Saturday flew about 80 miles toward the country's western sea. Swing state Pennsylvania, the stage for a clash of presidents today. Each party's biggest stars working to energize the voters just days before Tuesday's voting. Former President Barack Obama opens the day at a Pittsburgh rally with Democratic Senate hopeful John Fetterman. Obama and Fetterman will appear alongside President Joe Biden and gubernatorial candidate Josh Shapiro later in the day in Philadelphia. Former President Donald Trump will hold a rally in southwestern Pennsylvania with Dr. Mehmet Oz, the Republican Senate candidate, and gubernatorial candidate Doug Mastriano. The flurry of presidential attention underscores the high stakes in the traditional battleground state of Pennsylvania. Al B.D. is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In D.C. on the Anacostia Freeway, southbound 2 construction projects. First, you're going to find construction between East Capitol Street and Pennsylvania Avenue. Also, southbound on 295, construction between the 11th Street Bridge and Suitland Parkway. On the northbound side of 295, construction between Malcolm X Avenue and South Capitol Street. In Prince George's County, on the BW Parkway southbound, there is a crash. Right lane is blocked after Kenilworth Avenue. And on the outer loop of the Beltway in Cabin John, 3 lanes are blocked for construction between Clara Barton Parkway and the George Washington Parkway. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some morning fog, then partly sunny and unseasonably warm. It's already quite mild for this time of the year. Highs will be in the mid to upper 70s. Mostly cloudy, patchy fog tonight. Lows in the upper 50s to low 60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, unseasonably warm with a few showers. Highs in the low to mid 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Matt Ritter and the First Alert Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:32 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. Jennifer Harper is with us. She, of course, writes Inside the Beltway column at the Washington Times, WashingtonTimes.com. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Rick.
Tuesday is the big day in the USA. And after Tuesday's elections, there are going to be a lot of questions asked about Joe Biden in 2024 and Donald Trump in 2024. And you've got a poll that already begins to answer those questions.
Yes, indeed. In fact, the news organizations have been tearing this apart all week. In fact, Fox News, CNN, Washington Post, a couple of sources have already said that President Biden is planning on revealing whether he's going to make a 2024 reelection bid after the midterms are over. But, you know, we'll see. That could be hearsay. We don't know. But it could be the big reveal and done with much drama or not so much drama. But I think the real takeaway is whether or not voters want him to run for reelection. And, yes, indeed, I've got a little poll here. This is from the Economist YouGov poll, one of my favorites there. They found that 54% of registered U.S. voters say that Mr. Biden should stay out of the race in 2024. That includes, surprisingly enough, 29% of Democrats, 34% of liberals, and even 32% of those who voted for him 2 years ago. That's not the greatest. And also, the people who had the strongest feelings were, of course, kind of predictably those who voted for Mr. Trump back in 2020. And 78% of the Trump voters said that Mr. Biden should just kind of leave it alone. But, gosh, let's move on to Mr. Trump, because YouGov also addressed whether people want Mr. Trump to run for president in 2024. Here's what they found. 59% of U.S. voters do not want Mr. Trump to run for president in 2024. That includes 28% of Republicans, 56% of independents, and 88% of Democrats. So we'll see. These are all shaken out. They've got multiple demographics here from men and women and people who go to church and everything else. So, again, that's a YouGov poll. It was conducted October 22 through 25.
So the current president has not spent much time on the road. He's out this weekend in some states where he can't do too much damage, apparently. But what about the former president on the Republican side?
Yes, indeed. Let's go back to Mr. Trump, because perhaps it is kind of like 2018 for him right now, because the 45th president is ready to roll. And here is what he says in a new public outreach that came out this week. He says the midterm elections on November 8th could not be more important. The support of every single American patriot is desperately needed, which is why I am hitting the road and holding four rallies in 5 days. Now, believe it or not, Mr. Trump has already left on his massive rally tour here. He left Thursday, and his first stop was Sioux City, Iowa. And today, Saturday, he's going to be in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Sunday, he'll be in Dayton, Ohio, and Monday, just 24 hours before those poll doors swing open and the big competition begins, he's going to be up there in Ohio. So that's what's going on. And Mr. Trump, he's hitting the road just like normal.
We've seen the broadcast networks and the majority of the cable networks basically protecting President Biden. Obviously, they buried the Hunter Biden story. And typically, they'll lean toward protecting the president. And are you seeing any change in that as he appears to become more desperate?
No, not particularly so. And we're going to turn to our good friends at newsbusters.org, always an interesting group to follow. And they have determined that the big three broadcast networks, that, of course, is ABC, CBS, and NBC, they continue to shield President Biden from kind of caustic coverage. And these folks conducted a pretty in-depth study about the coverage. They looked at evening newscast, which aired on the big three networks between September 1st and October 26th. That's quite a ways and in a very pivotal time. And they homed in on 115 evening news stories that were focused solely on the midterm elections, and they racked up a big airtime of 213 minutes. And according to Rich Noyes, he's a senior editor for Newsbusters, he says, while President Trump was a huge focus of network coverage 4 years ago, accounting for 48% of all midterm campaign coverage in 2018, more than all of the individual House, Senate, and gubernatorial candidates combined, well, guess what? The networks aren't interested in targeting President Biden this year. Gee, I wonder why. Biden accounts for just 34 minutes of midterm coverage. That's only 16% of the total campaign coverage. So Mr. Noyes is kind of on to something that may not be as obvious, but according to newsbusters.org, their networks are still shielding Mr. Biden.
Since the very beginning of the administration, the Secretary of Homeland Security, the President, and the White House Press Secretary have told us that the border is secure, as has our border czar, Kamala Harris. Well, that's a big lie. Oh, where have I heard that before? And there are plenty of other mistruths that have come out of the White House. How is that playing out? Is anybody catching up on that? I mean, don't we have some extra Pinocchios we could be handing out here?
Yeah, I think we can. But the takeaway message here is that all these, and they're calling them untruths, Rick, could topple the Democratic efforts here. And we're going to turn to tipinsights.com. This is a news organization which is allied with the Tip Poll, which is a poll that's been around for 3 decades. And they say that even the liberal media is conceding that the red wave that's coming is likely to be massive. It is just not that the GOP holds a substantial lead over independents in some blue states like New York, Connecticut, and Oregon. Even some Democrats are coming home to the GOP, and this is an editorial from TipInsights.com. And they also confirm in their surveys that the usual factors for the Democrats' poor performance include immigration, crime, and economy. They don't do so well on all that stuff in the polls. But one factor that matters the most to voters is also critical. Honesty. That's what the voters are looking for. And according to the TIP poll, it says the Democrats have hurt themselves over Republicans unlike at any time in recent memory. The Biden administration's spin machine has been on overdrive for 2 years. President Biden is the king of dishonesty. That is according again to tipinsights.com, and they have said this in an editorial, and they cited a lot of examples of this damaging spin that they put out there. And they say untruths cause people to lose trust and faith in the Biden administration and the party itself. The Democrats always take positions which the average voter disagrees with and say things are fundamentally untrue. Expect a rout on November the 8th, and there's nothing untrue about that. So that's one opinion on spinning. Too much spinning.
Too much spinning and too much spending. Look at that $400 billion the president has, I guess, taken out of his own pocket because it was never approved by the Congress to take care of the student loan debt forgiveness. And you've got some numbers on how the recipients may intend to spend that windfall?
Yes, this is part two of all that with a $400 billion student loan bailout. My gosh, that's a mighty big purse there. But what the heck are the kids going to do with this money when and if they get it? And there's some surprising findings about that. I've got another poll for you this morning. This is coming from intelligent.com. And it was a survey that was conducted October the 20th. And they asked the kids, essentially, tell us what you're going to spend the money for. Here's what they found out. 73% of the applicants say that they are likely to spend their extra money on non-essentials, including vacations, smartphones, drugs, and alcohol. Moving right along, they say some respondents said that they would spend the money on stock market investments, gifts for someone else, gambling, or their wedding plans. The news is not entirely negative, though. Some of the would-be recipients also said they were going to use the money on groceries, rent or mortgage, credit card debt, medical care, and child care. And it says that men are more likely than women to spend the money on the non-essentials. And another 77% said that they could probably use the money more wisely. And 4 in 10 actually said that the student loans haven't negatively affected their lives in the first place. So, again, this is a poll, very telling one, I thought, from intelligent.com.
Drugs, alcohol, and gambling. Well done, Mr. President. Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, Rick. Have a good day.
And, of course, you can follow Jennifer on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. We'll talk to Jim Trustee next, but first we will head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Al BD is there this morning.
In Virginia on 395 northbound, there is a crash. Right lane is blocked in Alexandria at Edsel Road. Now on the Beltway, Outer Loop, Cabin John construction. Three lanes are blocked between the Clara Barton Parkway and the GW Parkway. On the inner loop of the Beltway in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes. Lanes are clear and at speed. And in D.C. on the Anacostia Freeway. On the southbound side, construction between East Capitol Street and Pennsylvania Avenue. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some morning fog, then partly sunny and unseasonably warm. It's already quite mild for this time of the year. Highs will be in the mid to upper 70s. Mostly cloudy, patchy fog tonight. Lows in the upper 50s to low 60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, unseasonably warm with a few showers. Highs in the low to mid 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Matt Ritter in the First Alert Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital, 644, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is a Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trustee joins us. He is a member of the Trump legal team. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington and also the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, it seems this past week or so has been a little bit quiet on the investigation of former President Trump and Mar-a-Lago. Of course, the campaign overshadowing the news for the most part this week. But give us an update on where things stand at the end of this week.
Sure. Well, it's quiet in public, but anything but quiet behind the scenes. Biggest part of the last week that I can at least talk about is that we began reviewing 2,900 and some change items that were seized from Mar-a-Lago, mostly documents, but all sorts of stuff. And I'll give you some examples without too much editorializing, but hundreds of newspapers and clippings that he had in his possession until they took them on August 8th, hundreds of photos, maybe thousands even, of photographs, golf shirts, thank you notes, birthday cards, you name it. So, again, I'll be careful not to editorialize, but a wide-ranging set of materials that the FBI took on August 8th. So we've been plowing through that, and that's basically dealing with the special master to determine how these items should be categorized, whether any of them are subject to executive privilege, whether any of them are presidential under the Presidential Records Act versus personal. So that's kind of a joint exercise that we have to go through with DOJ. We'll meet and confer with them next week and then basically point out the areas of disagreement for the special master to resolve. Relatedly, when the special master was appointed, there was an appeal by the government. Remember, we talked about them fighting the very notion of judicial oversight. Well, our brief, the appellee brief, is due with the 11th Circuit in a few days. And so we'll be addressing that issue head on with the 11th Circuit. And meanwhile, whether or not the 11th Circuit reaches it soon, we'll be chugging along with the special master trying to get to the finish line and to get to some litigation regarding the search warrant.
So we all saw the horror in the Waukesha Christmas parade. Daryl Brooks, the suspect, is no longer a suspect. The verdict is in. And what struck you about this entire case and trial, Jim?
Well, a couple of things, some of which we've talked about, and I'll remind your listeners of. I mean, this was a very important case. It didn't get the media attention, and that stays the case. I mean, it really didn't get any sort of attention in the mainstream media that this man was convicted on all 76 counts, including six counts of murder. Jury was out for less than 3 hours, and so what I would call that is barely polite. In other words, they went back. They talked to each other, decided who the foreperson would be, perhaps reviewed some of the exhibits, and before you know it, they had a clean sweep verdict. You know, not surprisingly, there's emotions run high in the community, and so during the verdict, someone in the gallery yelled, "Burn in hell, you piece of something," before being cut off and removed from the courtroom. And, you know, we report about and we talk about homicide trials. And it's kind of easy to lose track of just how devastating the crime is. And I think there's a couple of reminders that I think are worth mentioning because it is the heart of it. You know, this is not – murder prosecutions aren't about, you know, economic loss to society. They're about moral loss. It's something horrible has happened that affects the stream of people's lives and cuts lives short. And there was a lot of very poignant commentary by – family members and friends of the victims. And, you know, I'd be happy to add to that, you know, God bless these folks. God bless the dancing grannies that lost lives. 8-year-old Jackson Sparks, his father posted something that's really kind of hard to fathom. And he posted, "This one is for you, my sweet little boy. Keep hitting homers in heaven till we meet again." And it's a brutal but important, I think, reminder that for all of the commentary, for all the media attention, you know, you're talking about absolute horrors and absolute tragedies when you speak of murder cases such as that by Daryl Brooks. And, of course, Mr. Brooks made a mockery in some senses of the entire trial by acting up, by representing himself. But thankfully, the judge kept control. The families respect the process and the system considerably more than Mr. Brooks does. And on sentencing on November 15th and 16th, she set aside 2 days, we can expect to see multiple life counts. So Mr. Brooks will, in fact, spend the rest of his life in prison. And there's some measure of justice for Jackson Sparks and the dancing grannies.
One of the fun things about having you on the show, Jim, is you will find stories in the legal community, and they're not things we normally hear about, but they're really interesting kind of inside baseball stuff when you explain them. So you've got one on a U.S. district court judge.
Yeah, I love this guy. That's the short version of the story. There's a judge named Benjamin Beaton, who's a U.S. district court judge in the Western District of Kentucky. And apparently he's made a speech that a little while ago that was recently reported, where he basically took the unusual stance of telling people he doesn't think that judges should be referred to as Your Honor. And he traces the phrase Your Honor back to aristocrats in England and France. He says it's evidence of something that he calls, and many lawyers are familiar with, a disease called black robitis. And really what black robitis means is out-of-control ego. I have to say, I've lived it for many years. It's not that every judge succumbs to this ego, but there are folks that you knew as practitioners, you knew them as prosecutors, defense attorneys, and they become a robe, and all of a sudden they are the kings or queens of all humanity, and it seems to be more about ego than any magic quality to the black robe. So this judge kind of went out on a limb, and he said a couple of things in the speech that I thought were just great. The first is that the judges aren't the law, despite whatever Yale might be teaching these days. I thought it was quite a dig at the notion of the living constitution and activist judicial work. But then it got even more specific. He was talking about worldwide injunctions when one district court judge is asked to stop something by the entire U.S. government, and he was questioning whether or not it's particularly appropriate for a federal district court judge in Western District of Kentucky or anywhere else to be the person that applies a rule to the entire United States. And so his quote is, "This is a bold request indeed." And in parens, he writes, "In chambers, we call them hold my beer motions." He says, "Are the lawyers aware that the Senate and president just a few months ago made me a judge over only one half of one state? And now they want me to tell the entire federal government what it can't do anywhere in the world." And so what I like about Judge Beaton is not just that he seems to be kind of a humble guy, but really it's a broader statement about judicial activism and federalism. It's really talking about the need for limited reach and for respecting the inherent limits of being a judge. And that's a great reminder for the entire bench. So that's our story of the week from out of left field, but I think it's a good one in terms of this particular judge.
So we turn from black robitis to the Washington Redskins. And yes, I said Redskins because we take you back to the glory days and one of the legends, Dave Butts, passed away this week.
Yeah, I'm so upset about this story because Dave Butts was just a heroic figure if you're a Redskin fan. He died yesterday at age 72. And you know, remember at the time, Butts was enormous compared to the rest of the playing field. He was a defensive tackle at about 6'8", over 300 pounds. Somehow that's now routine, that size, or maybe on the average size. But he was a giant, gifted player and actually known to be quite the gentle giant off the field, but a menace on the field. He had 14 seasons with the Redskins, 2 Super Bowl rings. I think he's just incredibly sorely missed by his teammates from everything I can see. Went to Purdue for college, so I'm hoping maybe he took a class with my late uncle, who was a professor at Purdue. And I'm just happy, Rick, that you would give me the quick opportunity for, I think, a million fans out there to give our condolences to his family and to his friends and know that a lot of fans from the Redskin glory years are very sad this weekend to see Big Dave Butts moving on.
Jim, great of you to acknowledge a great leader on the Washington Redskins and a great time for all of us here in the Washington area in those winning Redskins years. Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, as always. Jim, thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
6:54 is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Heather Curtis has got the 7 o'clock news coming up, and they've got John Gizzi coming up. We'll talk a lot about the campaign, what's next, and also Bibi Netanyahu back in Israeli leadership. Ooh, interesting development there. And also coming up, we've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We'll get the very latest on North Korea and those missile launches, and also a look at Ukraine. And KT McFarland will join us as well this morning, and we'll look at the campaign and everything that is going to happen on Tuesday around the country. So stay with us here on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.